The following podcast contains spoilers for The Adventures of Tintin and Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. This is episode 14 of Celluloid Freaks. I'm Chris.
I'm Matt.
And we're going to talk about The Adventures of Tintin. Kat can't be with us for this episode because she is taking her boyfriend to go see Blade Runner on the big screen.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's really one of the only acceptable excuses for missing a taping of the show.
Yeah, perfectly acceptable excuse. I kind of wish I was there.
Yeah,
right
me too.
Now.
I'd blow off this thing too.
Yeah, fuck this show.
But let's just get into it and talk about The Adventures of Tintin.
Okay, let's talk. All right, I'm ready to talk about not Indiana Jones and the Secret of the Unicorn.
Well, I don't even think, let's not even think about it as far as a comparison to Indiana Jones. Let's just think about it as a movie that wasn't that interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, because you compare anything to Indiana Jones, of course it's going to fall up short. So let's not try to cripple our argument like that.
I always say that because one of the first reviews of Raiders of the Lost Ark called it an homage to Tintin. I think that's actually where Steven Spielberg heard of the comic.
Huh.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it doesn't even matter where it came from. All that matters is I didn't enjoy myself.
Yeah, it kind of sucked.
I don't think it was terrible. It wasn't a crime against movies. Just nothing happened that I cared about. I kept thinking, he goes, like, it introduces this ship that, like, for some reason, he sees at the exact same time the villain and the guy following the like, find it. Like, at some sort of market. Like, they both track it down to the market at the same time.
That's the power of cinema.
Happenstance. Just really, mysteries and coincidences are poison to mysteries.
Yeah.
And I from there, I thought it was stupid. And there was only one moment that kept me interested, is when there's a guy standing outside the door, and then all of a sudden, the door's getting shot at. Like, that was kind of surprising. Other than that, just kind of really boring, even though, like, there's always something going on action-wise. It just was thoroughly boring because the mystery wasn't,
it wasn't all that great. It was just a dumb kids movie.
Yeah, it wasn't engaged. Well, I mean, you know, kids movies can be good, too.
Yeah, they can, but I don't think this one was. Maybe because I'm in my 20s, I don't really find the idea of, like, a little dog sidekick all that great. And I thought Captain Haddock was just a cartoonish buffoon. Wasn't really all that interesting.
No.
And
I like the fact that I like the fact that there was something, there was drunken recall in a children's movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, that was interesting that they would even have that. I remember that concept from, from real life, but from Beer Fest.
I never saw Beer Fest.
Interesting movie.
That's what I keep hearing.
But I thought it was interesting that was in a kids movie as well as, you know.
Yeah. The only thing I liked about this movie was toward the end that like one long continuous shot they did while they're. Chase.
Yeah, it would have been impressive if it were a live-action movie.
Yeah, I mean, since it's animation, you know, whatever, but it still looked kind of nice.
Yeah, it was, except to me it was filler. It was like, they're at the top of here, and they need to get down to the ship there.
Yeah.
So why not just show the entire time it takes them to get from the top to the bottom?
Also, filler.
That's what this whole movie was filler.
Also, filler, the whole thing with the pickpocketer. Like that.
Yes.
That has no bearing on the plot.
I wrote that in my little like 300 word review that the only thing it does is make sure that the movie goes on an extra 10 minutes.
It wasn't funny or clever. It was just stupid.
I felt I feel really bad because I'm sure that Nicholas Frost and Simon Pegg tried to be funny.
Wait, that was... Wait, were they the,
They were the Thompson twins, which I just, I love calling them the Thompson twins.
Oh, wow, that was a misfire.
Yeah, and not their fault, which is also, because it's like, the movie's written by Joe Cornish and Edgar Wright, both of whom I really like, too, so I really feel bad, because I don't want to blame it for them, so maybe the execution comes from Spielberg's direction, but, I don't know, it just wasn't...
And with this, us being, like, Americans and all, we can't really, you know, say, compare it with the comic or anything because, like, what? Like, most, probably, like, you know, 80% of Americans never even heard of the comic. It was, like, what, Belgium or something?
I think so. And it just, but it doesn't matter. The source doesn't matter because if it's not good, it's not good.
Nah, and I just didn't think this was all that great.
Yeah, that. And I think if the comic is so well revered, then it deserved better than this.
Probably.
Because
I did have to roll my eyes at one part, or when they're trying to get the third ship, and it shows the ship in there, bulletproof glass. Like, okay, the bad guy's going to try to steal this. How is he going to do it? And he gets an opera singer to crack the glass. Really?
Yeah.
Just, like, oh, that's just stupid. This is really fucking stupid.
And it was particularly poorly done. I mean, once they introduced that, it's like, okay, you know what's going to happen, so now they're just going to fill it with, you know, some suspense. But it's not really suspense, you know what's going to happen. And again, with the filler, I mean, that whole thing with the gunpowder and the lamplights, you know, trying to keep the fuse from being lit, stomping it out, it's all just forestalling something that you know is going to happen. It's just, it's not tense. It's like, all right, just get to the thing.
Yeah. Once again, it just felt like it was just really, really long. It was only like an hour and a half or so.
Yeah, it was an hour and 41 minutes. They get to this point where we're at the end where there's like, oh, look, another thing or clue or whatever it is. And I thought, oh, this really better be a sequel hook and not another piece of the movie that's coming, and thank God it was a sequel hook, because I couldn't.
I thought it was weird they don't actually find the ship in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I was expecting them to find the ship, like, but no, honestly, it did not keep my interest. And you know, I really can't help but compare it to Indiana Jones, you know, since it is a similar types of movies. I was sitting there thinking, I was like, you know what? All of this was done much better in, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Last Crusade, you know? And Spielberg directed those movies, you know? Why were those movies so good and this one sucked? I can't help it. The entire thing, I was comparing it to Indiana Jones.
Well, maybe it's that, I mean, with Indiana Jones, you have the charm of real people like Harrison Ford.
Yeah, maybe because, I don't know, Indiana Jones is just a much better character than Tintin. And,
I don't think that's necessarily true, but the way that Tintin comes across, he's certainly not interesting. I like the idea of a, you know, very young reporter who solved all these mysteries and whatnot. Just wasn't done well.
Like I said, maybe this will be big in Europe or whatever, but...
It is. Like, it's clearly made a lot of money, just not here.
Well, yeah, nobody here's ever heard of it. I mean, I guess it would be the same kind of problem if, you know, there ever was, like, a big budget, you know, major release Doctor Who movie.
We're not going to go, it's like, purely without any influence from me, Doctor Who just keeps coming up every episode.
Yeah, we're trying to go 1 week without mentioning Doctor Who.
Man, I'm trying to go 1 week where I don't have to put a spoiler warning at the beginning of the episode.
Though, I mean, nobody I know has seen Tintin. Nobody I know really wants to see it. So, I mean, I don't think anybody really cares.
I was kind of excited to see it. I wanted to see it. Well, I mean, knowing what I know now, I mean, yeah. But
yeah.
I really thought it was going to be something good. And, you know, we've been waiting for several years for something from Spielberg, and, I heard one movie was going to be an animated movie, and one movie is going to be a drama about a horse, and
I watched most of the horse drama. I'll talk about that after we're done here.
Okay. Yeah, so now it's on to waiting for Spielberg's next movie, the Lincoln biopic, which I've been waiting for since that stupid book came out.
That could be good, if done right.
Yeah, it could. Well, Daniel Day-Lewis is Lincoln before it was Liam Neeson, which would have been awesome, too. But Daniel Day-Lewis is probably better.
Yeah, he's probably a better actor.
Yeah, well, that picture of him as Lincoln was like, holy crap.
Yeah, that
there he
looks
does it
perfect.
Again.
He's perfect.
He's not Daniel Day-Lewis. He's just, you know, Lincoln.
He's Lincoln.
So let's just put a button on this and say that I'd give Tintin 2 out of 4 stars.
I'd give it 1.5 out of 5.
We gotta get on the same scale.
No,
one of these days.
Yeah, okay. You go to my scale.
You could go to mine, though. I mean, because it's not like 4 stars. It's the classic Roger Ebert, Leonard Maltin scale or anything.
21st century, buddy. Yeah, 5 stars in the 21st century.
What's the lowest point on your scale?
0.
0, okay. So you essentially... 0. So you have an 11-point scale.
I guess.
What's the point of having an 11-point scale?
I don't know. Stop hating.
But so what's the middle of your scale? What's like slightly average? What would
50.
Be
50? On a scale of 0 to 100, 1 star is 20 points. Half a star is 10 points. Gave Tintin 1.5
stars. Half star slightly less than 10 points, apparently.
How?
Because you have an 11-point scale.
How do I have an 11-point scale?
0, 1/2, 1, 1.5, 2, 2.5, 3, 3.5, 4, 4.5, 5. That's 11. That's 11 points.
No, it's because 0 stars, 0, that's 0, half a star would be 10.
Yeah, but we're going in increments here. There's 11 increments.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No. Okay, 1 star is 20. Half a star is 10. 5 stars, that's 100.
If you have 0 to 5 in half star increments, that's 11 points. If there are 11 points, then it's 11. Maybe you're...
Yeah.
You're starting to...
Yeah.
I like my 4-star better. Let's just...
All right, then.
All right, well, enough of Tintin, and let's talk about all the stuff that we did and movies and TV shows we watched. And
all right, you first. You're the host.
Well, I watched Moneyball, and I think that I'm reminded why it's my number 2 movie of the year, but I'm also reminded why I didn't give it a perfect score, because there's too many him looking out a car window brooding shots in that
movie. Yeah, I also watched Moneyball this week, and yeah, very, very good movie, very interesting story. Brad Pitt is good, as always. Fat Jonah Hill is... You know, good in a dramatic role.
Let's see how good skinny Jonah Hill is in 21 Jump Street.
Ah, yeah, that is coming out. But yeah, Moneyball was good. It told an interesting story. I mean, I don't really watch sports all that much, but I like sports movies. And this one was a different kind of sports movie.
Yeah, it was. It was really nice. I liked it. Yeah. But that's all I watched.
Oh, yeah?
It really is. Other than playing some video games, there's, like, nothing. I caught up with some TV shows, but, I mean, it doesn't.
Yeah. And I also watched about, I would say, 70% of War Horse this week.
70%? You really made it. Okay, how long is War Horse? It's 2.5 hours.
2.5 hours. It felt like 6.
Is that bad?
I mean, it's one of those movies that critics will, you know, lose their shit over. But, God, it was just so long and so boring. And every other line is like, oh, wow, that's some horse. Or, oh, God, that's just some horse. Just Oh, it just felt it very forced, just trying to force all this sentimentality on us. I mean, the movie's about this horse starts off at, like, this farm, and he gets shipped, and the horse is bought, and for the front, you know, by the British Army for World War One. And it follows the horse around through, like, several different owners and such, and none of them are very interesting. It's just very long and very boring. I don't know, maybe it's just me, you know.
Well, I mean, it is just you. That's why we do this. We all
I mean, it also had one of the strangest trailers I've ever seen. Like, I don't know if you saw like the trailer for it. It was more like an infomercial. Rather than like showing just footage from the movie, it would have the actors from the movie saying like, "Oh, this is a story about, you know, courage and bravery." And another actor from the movie would be like, "It's a story about an incredible horse." I'm like, what?
I would prefer more trailers like that as opposed to the ones that pretty much show the entire movies or are just ridiculously misrepresenting the entire movies.
Yeah, I guess. But no, I didn't like it. It was very long and very boring, and they just couldn't convince me there was anything special about this horse. No, because like the very first part is like this farmer is going to buy the horse, and he's looking for a plow horse, and just for some reason he buys just this one horse right here, although everybody tells him, "Oh, that's no good for a plow horse," but he's like, "Oh no, there's something about this horse that I have to," it's like just buy a regular plow horse. Apparently he pays like 5 times as much as he should have, and ends up owing his landlord a bunch of money. Just, like this whole movie could have been avoided if he just bought a regular plow horse.
Very nice.
It's just very boring, and another miss from Steven Spielberg.
That's really a shame, because, I mean, you know, his last decade starts, he was really kind of, I mean, he produced one of his best movies with Minority Report, and I thought that was, you know, a good sign that even after, you know, some people, their careers just, they can't ever beat their early days. A lot of bands are like that.
Looking at you, Kevin Costner.
But, you know, even after, you know, his good early career with Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, etc., he goes on to, like, this other part of career where he makes movies like Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan.
He peaked with Schindler's List.
And Saving Private Ryan. And then, like, in the early part of the last decade, he comes out with Minority Report. He proves he can still make a pretty, really awesome movie. And then we get The Adventures of Tintin and War Horse.
And Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Dude, that movie wasn't that bad. I don't...
No, it wasn't as bad as everybody says it was, but it was still pretty stupid.
Yeah, it was stupid in the sense that, like, a lot of... I don't think... Look, if we're ranking the Indiana Jones movies, it's better than Temple of Doom, okay?
No.
I want you to admit that.
I do not agree at all.
Temple of Doom just sucks.
No, don't agree. Temple of Doom is the third best.
If you can't accept all that sci-fi crap from Indiana Jones, you shouldn't be accepting of that stupid pulling out heart.
No, you see, that's the thing. I accepted the sci-fi stuff. I got what they were trying to do, but I just don't think they did it very well.
Okay, at least that I can respect.
I have no problem with the aliens, because it's the 50s. They're trying to spoof on, you know, the whole B-movie stuff. Like, fine, that's cool. You know, I was actually familiar with the whole Crystal Skull theory, you know, before that movie came out, so I have no problem. I mean, people complain, "Oh, it's not, they're not after religious stuff." I was like, well, depends, you know, on what perspective you're looking at. But, I was fine with that, but I just don't think it was done very well.
Okay, that I can respect at least.
Yes.
I'm tired of people ragging on the sci-fi aspect. It's like, you're okay. Whatever. Let's just move on. Anything else you watched?
Let me think. Oh, me and my girlfriend watched this Finnish movie called Troll Hunter.
Ooh.
It's like a found footage movie. Except instead of like Ghost or the Blair Witch, it follows a troll hunter around Finland and he hunts trolls.
Is it like how Twister follows the Storm Chasers?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, because I've seen the interesting cover art for the, on the DVD for that. I just never bothered to pick it up or watch it.
It was just one of those we picked off of Netflix. Oh, and speaking of kids' movies, I watched Tangled with my, part with my girlfriend and her daughter, and then the part by myself. And that was really good. I liked it.
Is that a Disney movie?
Yes, Disney. With Disney, Rapunzel, their take on the Rapunzel story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, because we're trying to figure out something to watch, and my girlfriend's kid was like, oh, Tangled, have you ever seen that? I'm like, no, I haven't. You want to watch Tangled? And she's like, okay. So we sit down and start watching it. I'm getting into it. I'm liking it. Their kid, being 5 years old, that goes off and starts playing something on the computer or something. I'm sitting there watching it. My girlfriend's like, you know, I've seen this 1,000 times. We can watch something else if you want. I'm like, are you sure? She's like, yeah, we can change it. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. So we watched that Troll Hunter movie, but as soon as I got back from her house, I finished watching Tangled, and I liked it a lot.
You see, so there's... Good to know that children in movies can still entertain us even through our mid-20s.
Yeah, which is why I guess I probably need to see Hugo, because everybody I know is just fapped a lot over it.
It's a really, really good movie. And I guess out of the two established and legendary film directors that have made a 3D children's movies this year, Scorsese is the one that didn't screw it up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'll find some way to watch it.
I just hope you have a better first viewing than I did.
So you finally went back and like saw it again, or?
Yeah. No, we reviewed it on the show. I thought you were here, but that's just my crummy memory.
No, because I remember we were the one where you left because like the Euro trash wouldn't stop talking. I didn't know if you had like actually gone back and tried to see it again.
I did. I went and saw it again, and it was really good. Wasn't great. It was really good. Now,
all right.
On to something that is going to be hovering over the show for the next couple of weeks. The Celluloid Freaks Awards, which are just general awards for now. Maybe next year we'll add new categories, but we're just testing it out. Uh-huh. Two different awards, worst release of the year, best release of the year. The number of nominees varies. It's based on a point system, so whichever movies reach this point threshold become a nominee, so anywhere from 2 to, I guess, mm-hmm. 4, considering I'm polling 4 people. Movie. Yeah. Well, actually, no, more than that. Anywhere from 2 to whatever movies can be nominees. So this year it happens to be that there are 6 nominees in each category, and I know that you think that it's obvious which one is going to win, but I wouldn't be so sure.
Only by going with what was in our top 5. There are 3 movies in one or more of our top 5s. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Muppets, and Super 8, I think.
Yeah, but there's also a fourth list you don't know about from Matt St. Mark Kelly.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that one yet. Does he have one on his Facebook page or something?
It's not published, and I am going to keep it that way just to keep an element of surprise from some of us. The audience of our show hasn't seen any of our lists, so they don't really know this. But I'm going to go here with, in alphabetical order, here are the nominees for Worst Release of 2011. And we'll say a few words on each release.
Okay.
Green Lantern.
That's mine.
Yeah, That is just a movie that just did not look appealing to me in any
Absolutely.
Way, and I am so glad I did not see it.
Maybe you should still watch it for the lulz.
No.
All right.
Next is Immortals.
I didn't see it. Maybe I should.
Truly a floater. A floater. That's a two-flusher. All right. The next on the list is Killer Elite.
What was
Robert
that?
De Niro and Jason Statham. How can you go wrong?
Oh, wait. I think I saw a trailer for that somewhere.
Yeah, we all saw the trailer. That was the one that had that awful cover of the Scorpion song, Rock You Like a Hurricane.
You mean a Jason Statham movie wasn't good?
Hey, you know what? You know what?
What?
Some of his movies are just so ridiculous. They're awesome.
Like
Death
the Expendables.
Race. Death Race. Awesome.
Expendables.
Yeah, no, Expendables was boring.
Oh.
It was boring.
Well, oh, all right, I can see that.
I fell asleep. I fell asleep in a movie with nothing but action stars and explosions. I fell asleep. I was wide awake when I started. All right.
All right, then.
Next, Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides.
Oh, so long and boring.
Otherwise known as that Pirates of the Caribbean movie where Keira Knightley isn't in it.
That was okay, though.
I like Keira Knightley. I go to hell.
Nah, pass.
All right, next on the list is Season of the Witch. That Nicholas.
Oh, God. I tried watching that on Netflix. It was terrible. Oh, God, that movie was so bad. Poor Nick Cage.
He brings it on himself, really.
Oh, God.
Because for every tremendous performance, like Leaving Las Vegas, Raising Arizona, or Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, you get 20 movies like Next and Season of the Witch and Bangkok Dangerous.
Was so I don't even remember anything about it, just how awful it was.
That's why it's on the list.
God.
Actually, I can't, to be honest, I can't even remember which one is the quote winner, unquote, of this. But it's just from the sounds we're making, it sounds like Season of the Witch should be. And then the last on the list is Tower Heist.
I had no desire to see it at all. Have fun with that, buddy.
Oh, that was just, that was a movie of some kind. All right.
It was a Brett Ratner movie.
You know, it's, I understand the need to crap on Brett Ratner because he's just
because
a terrible,
he sucks.
He's a terrible person.
He's a hack.
But that's the thing, that, like, it's his movies have, like, there's nothing inherently bad about his direction. It's just that there's nothing good about it. So I don't understand calling it, like...
Did you see X-Men 3? Huh?
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Now, the six nominees for Best Release of 2011. Number one is, well, it's in alphabetical, so Drive.
Oh, love it. Love that movie. I'm probably going to watch it tonight after we're done. Love
see,
that movie.
These are the responses that a good list should generate. Granted, the sample audience is just you and me,
movie.
So I don't, there's no controversy between us on it.
Ron Swanson would approve of that.
All right, next on the list is The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Great
I kind of felt like that was the movie I was like, you know what, I could just walk out of Tintin and go a theater over and watch The Girl with the Dragon.
Yeah, you saw it again. Good movie. Really good.
All right. Next on the list is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Also, great movie.
I didn't see it, sadly.
Really?
Yeah, I actually did not see any of these, either of these last two.
Did you read the book?
Yeah, I did. I did not see either of the Deathly Hallows movies, which is upsetting to me. Because I went and saw all of the Harry Potter movies in theaters up to this one. I don't know why I didn't, but I heard they were pretty good. Next on the list is The Muppets.
Yep, love it.
On the list after that is The People versus George Lucas.
Still need to see it. Thank you for that. I have 3 days off from work. I will watch that movie.
Yeah, and now that I've published these things are all locked in. If you see it and decide you wanted to add it to your list, you're kind of out of luck there, buddy, but...
I'm good with my list.
At some point, yeah. I was like, because even with this episode, we're still doing a 2011 release with Tintin, but I... Yeah.
But really, nobody else liked Planet of the Apes as much as I did? Really?
And next on the list is Super 8, if that answers your question.
Really? Super 8? I mean, it was good, but it was still a lot. It was just really cheesy.
Super 8 breached the point threshold in my rating system.
Man,
Rise of the Planet of the Apes did not.
Super 8?
If it makes you feel any better, I was the only person who put Moneyball on my list. I really love Moneyball, and it didn't end up on the list.
I would have gone with Moneyball over Super 8.
Yeah, well, you didn't, and
you
now it's not on the list, and I blame
what you
for
saying
that.
Remember what you were saying, like, 20 minutes ago about trailers lying to you? Super 8.
What? What did the trailer for Super 8 lie to you about?
I thought it was going to be a monster movie.
All it did was, like, it specifically told you as little as possible, which I think a trailer should do.
I didn't know I was going to get I wasn't expecting that.
Well, if you really didn't like it that much, you should have put it on your worst of list.
No, that's not the thing. It's that I liked it. It was a better Spielberg movie than Tintin or War Horse.
It was just, yeah, it was.
It's just that the parts that I thought were cheesy or bad, I thought were really bad. Like that little fat kid who keeps saying mint all the goddamn
time.
Dude,
and as I said, like a couple episodes, we all knew an annoying little fat kid like that.
I think for some, I was an annoying little fat kid.
You know, oddly enough, I wasn't fat when I was really young, but I am now,
Yeah. It wasn't a bad movie by any stretch of the imagination. It was just a little more cheesy than I thought it should have been, but still not bad. It's not Green Lantern or Tintin or anything.
Yeah, well, in both cases, in both of these lists, the first and the second movie are really, really close. So, that's that. I'm going to reveal the winners after, let's say, the episode after the Super Bowl break.
Okay, sounds good.
And in the meantime, that's really that for Celluloid Freaks. If you have any thoughts on,
Is nothing coming out within like the next few weeks or so.
Actually, there is, which will be great because when we reconvene next week, and I'm making this executive decision without Kat being here since she's not on the episode and she doesn't get a vote because she's not here, we are seeing Haywire for next week.
Oh, yeah, Haywire. That sounds awesome. Yeah,
exactly.
Haywire sounds great.
And after that, the week after that, The Gray, starring Liam Neeson.
Yes. I've heard nothing but good things about it.
January.
Okay, never mind what I just said. Good idea, sir.
Now,
great idea.
Have a little email here from our show's friend Andrew. He writes, regarding Matt's comment about Warrior and how that gave him the confidence regarding Hardy's performance as Bane, I wanted to bring up Hardy's performance in the Masterpiece Theater 2009 production of Wuthering Heights. It's available streaming on Netflix, and it's a great performance by Hardy and really gave me confidence that he can pull off Bane. So, there you go.
Wuthering Heights? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even more confidence in the Tom Hardy as Bane. This is actually the second letter that Andrew wrote the show. I didn't read his last one on the air, but I did reply to it. So thank you for writing, Andrew. And
Andrew.
I encourage even more correspondence to the show to celluloidfreaks@gmail.com. Love mail, hate mail, you name it.
Uh-huh.
In fact, if your hate mail is particularly hilarious, I will read it on the air.
You mad that I did Super 8? Let us know.
I'm mad over a lot of things that you do and say, Matt.
Stop hating, bro.
Well, I think that's that for today.
Yep, I think that's the night.
Next week, we'll reconvene with Haywire. Good night, everybody.
Peace, y'all.